It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Wes Collins is with us here this morning from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning, Ben.
Hope you and your firm, everybody fared okay?
Yeah, we're lucky. You know, generally down here in Carteret County, I'm thinking about those people in the kind of middle district of eastern North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Kinston, grew up there, and someone was telling me yesterday that the new sports shop is clearing out all of its inventory.
A sale.
Because, well, no, just moving it, putting it in box trucks, I think, because they're concerned about this, Neuse River rise up to Friday.
Right.
And that's the high. I don't really get that. I don't know why it takes that long for it to
rise
that
much.
Is it that slow? I don't really understand that. I had a conversation with a friend about that yesterday, but. You know, this is kind of Floyd all over again to a certain extent.
Yeah, it will reach just below that, but it will be some of those similar levels. It may not last as long because it'll drain out, but it's pretty interesting. And here was a wind event, mostly the backside winds is what took everybody out here.
That's exactly right.
So, what are we looking at today?
Just me today. We're going to talk about civil litigation, and we're going to talk about it in the context of a particular case that I handled many years ago, and it involved
a hurricane.
Actually, did involve a hurricane somewhat indirectly. We talked about it a little bit before the program started. This was a case about a family that left Carteret County because of an evacuation for a hurricane, and I don't remember what hurricane it was. I'd say it's about 5, 6, 7 years ago in that range. And they went to the Fayetteville area, went there to stay in a hotel to get away from, the area where they lived on Bogbanks.
Right.
Because there was a mandatory evacuation at the time. And unfortunately, the elderly couple, they were staying at a hotel, and the gentleman, the husband, walked across the highway to go get some food for he and his wife. And when he was walking back, he was hit by a vehicle and killed. And so our office handled the estate, and I handled the wrongful death part of the claim. So there was a lawsuit that ensued. And so we'll talk a little bit today, and it might pour over into next week as well, about just the inner workings of litigation, civil litigation, how the process works, and talk about it in the context of, this case.
So you have parallel things going on. You have the estate handling the estate, and then also handling, is there a fault to be attributed in this accident?
That's right. That's why in that particular case, we had our estate attorneys, and I handle estate work as well, but I am the litigator, the primary litigator at our office. So obviously, we've got our attorneys working on the estate and the issues with regard to the estate, gathering the will, dealing with any tax issues, dealing with, his will or any trust he may have. Doing all of the things that we've talked about on the program with regard to an estate administration. So as a part of that, it was necessary because of this appeared to be potentially a wrongful death for us to investigate the possibility of a claim against the driver of the vehicle who hit him and his insurance. So we looked into that closely, and, the pre-litigation setting situation in these type, situations where there's a personal injury claim is that, you get the police report, accident report. I mean, that's the first thing you do, really. And, you look at that closely. Obviously you talk with any witnesses that you can talk to, and, you kind of evaluate the case from the outset before you go file a lawsuit. Because if it's an obvious situation where you've got, for example, contributory negligence, meaning that in the event that the person in this case who was killed was contributed in a negligent way to, the incident that caused his death, then in North Carolina, and again, North Carolina is one of the very few contributory negligence states, then that is a complete bar to recovery. Okay. You can't recover anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about that because North Carolina is different, and what does that mean to be contributory, to have contributory negligence
Right.
Present?
Well, that means that in the context, like in this case, if it could be proven that this individual who was killed was negligent in the way that he crossed the street, for example, if it is proven that he failed to yield, he failed to look both ways, he didn't wait for the light to turn red with traffic going in front of him, but walked out in front of a car, and that can be proven, then it doesn't matter if the driver was speeding. It doesn't matter if the driver was doing something, you know, that caused it as well.
Or failed to yield to a pedestrian.
Failed to yield, that type thing. Then you get into jaywalking and those type issues.
So, and in North Carolina, it really is like any degree, right?
1%, you get zero recovery.
Right.
Most jurisdictions are a comparative negligence analysis, so that in the event, let's say that the person walking across the street was 10% contributory negligence to be determined by a jury. A jury determines that.
Right.
And let's say that the recovery is $100,000, then you can only get $90,000. Okay. It's reduced by that 10%. So that's the comparative analysis. But it's not a hard and fast rule where you get zero. That's just not the way it works. So in getting the police report in this particular case, the Fayetteville Police Department had done the investigation, and they had made the determination that the individual who died had failed to yield. And he failed to didn't go into a lot of detail, but just indicated that the reason that he was hit by the vehicle was because he did not didn't yield. He didn't take time to look both ways, I assume, and that he walked out in front of the car, and because he failed to yield, you know, he was hit by that car, and that was the official determination. So no one was ticketed. There was no citation, no violation against the driver. So here we are, pre-litigation setting, in a contributory negligence state, with a police report that says that the man who was killed was contributorily negligent in so many words.
Yeah.
So
in kind of layman's language, they're essentially saying that he walked out in front of the car.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, the other things that we look at there is on an incident report, you're normally going to have witnesses as well. And there were a couple witnesses on the incident report, names, phone numbers. And we did have a little bit of a difficult time getting in touch with those witnesses. Some of the information on the police report was incorrect. Phone numbers were incorrect. We tried to track down some of the people. Some of the people didn't want to get involved. And we run into that.
I would imagine.
Quite often. You know, I don't want to get involved in this. I'm busy. I've got a family to deal with. I've got work to deal with, so on and so forth. And I normally give them the, you know, the civil duty speech, you know, and usually I'm pretty successful with getting witnesses to come forward and say just what you saw, you know, what you witnessed.
Yeah, you're not in trouble.
Not in trouble.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So in this case, of course, you know, we communicate with the insurance company and had luckily had a fair amount of coverage, $250,000 of coverage. But they offered zero because it was contrib. It was a contributory negligence situation. And they were certainly justified, you know, in doing that.
If you take it just on the face of the police report.
And that's really all we had at that point in time.
Right.
And we did our due diligence, of course, to make a determination as to, you know, whether we had a witness that would say something else, so on and so forth.
But that's where you, when you talk about the process of civil litigation, this is where you start.
Right.
This is what you had to start with.
That's right.
But that's not where it finishes. Because, not always.
At that point in time, you know, we met, of course, or I met with the surviving spouse. And of course, she was very emotional about it, as you can imagine. These were elderly folks and she had lost her husband and, you know, it was a trying time for her, no question about it. And, you know, having to give her information like that, that there may be a problem with contributory negligence is not something that I really look forward to on a daily basis.
No, most people would never think about that.
They'd never think about it. That's right. So, you know, I would say that certainly it would be not inappropriate at that point in time to just stop and mm-hmm. not do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Because from all indications in that particular case, it looked like it was probably a huge contributory negligence mountain to climb.
Right.
But after consulting with the client and, you know, looking into it, really just discussing it further with her, the decision was to file the lawsuit, do some discovery, and see if we can get down to some of these witnesses, mm-hmm. see if we can get down to what really happened here.
Is it a red flag when you have wrong phone numbers or when you can't, you know, have a hard time tracking down a witness?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily, you know, a red flag. I would say it makes your job a little harder, but, yeah. you know, I don't have the...
It wasn't on purpose.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there were some assumptions based on the fact that this gentleman was elderly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was 80 or 81.
Right.
There were some assumptions that maybe he just doesn't have... He wasn't as sharp as he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a place where he did, you know, he's from Carteret County, and here he is walking across basically four lanes to go to a restaurant. I mean, that might not be the best choice anyway.
Right.
Might be better off to get in the car mm-hmm. to go and just drive across the, through the stoplight.
Was it nighttime, daytime?
It was dusk.
Mm-hmm.
It was dusk.
Another factor.
Yeah. So I think there were a lot of assumptions made in that case.
And again, so, a lot of reasons where you could have just stopped right there.
A lot of attorneys probably would do that. I mean, you know, and I would, depending mm-hmm. on what the client wants to do.
Okay. You know? All right. We'll talk about that role or the role of the client right there, too. And in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal, your questions are welcome. If you'd like to give us a call, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, again online at harvellandcollins.com. And Wes Collins is with us today talking about a case that involved an accident with a pedestrian from Carteret County who was killed, and then they file a suit. Now, is that a wrongful death suit?
A wrongful death.
Okay.
Wrongful death suit. So, you know, just to hit on a couple of issues here, you know, we're talking about a wrongful death suit. You have a 2-year statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 year shorter than your typical personal injury claim.
Right.
So that's something obviously to take into consideration. I mean, I think this logical, the reason that it is a shorter statute of limitations.
How soon was this filed?
I would say we probably filed it about maybe 5-6 months after the death,
okay.
after we have done our due diligence and
right.
looked into it and, you know, had a lot of conversation with the client about it.
But you said that before the break, that it was really the client who wanted to move forward with this then.
Well, it's appropriate to have the conversation with the client about, you know, the options and the fee arrangement, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normally in a personal injury claim, you know, the way that works, most law firms, you know, handle that on a contingency basis, and
mm-hmm.
that's the way we were handling that case.
Mm-hmm.
1/3 contingency is pretty typical. 1/3 mm-hmm. of any recovery. In the event you get a zero, 1/3 of zero, zero, right?
Yeah, right.
So not only does the client have to think about, you know, the fee arrangement, the attorney does as well, you know, when we're at that point, because we're talking,
sure.
you know, maybe 100 hours of time being
yeah.
spent on this, driving all over,
right.
taking depositions, maybe motions for summary judgment, lots of stuff to do. But the thing that you really talk to the client about is that you talk about costs,
mm-hmm.
because typically the way that works is that the client is still responsible for the cost in the litigation.
Mm-hmm.
You may hear on, you know, the commercials on TV, no attorney fee due unless
right.
we recover for you. Well,
yeah.
the attorneys don't say anything about cost.
Right.
Now, and cost can be significant. You
yeah.
know, we can be, you know, talking about potential expert witnesses. We can be talking about, accident reconstruction
mm-hmm.
experts. You know, we can talk about, you know, the deposition expenses.
Yeah.
All that could be $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 of cost in
mm-hmm.
a case like this, if mm-hmm. not more. So, you know, you really have to sit down and talk to the client about, look, we've got some problems with the case because of the contributory negligence aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
There will be cost, and you have to give a forecast, in my opinion, a reasonable forecast of what those costs would be So the client can make the decision as to whether they want to, you know, kind of roll the dice on that or not. Kind of take that risk.
And it's a difficult time. I mean, you've got a mourning client.
Right. So ultimately the decision after, you know, having that consultation with the client was to proceed and see what we gather, you know, through the litigation process. Because, you know, pre-litigation, I don't have the power of a subpoena. I can't make someone talk to me. I can't make someone come to a deposition. I can't really make anyone do much of anything. All I can do is try to gather the facts and hopefully gather enough facts to convince the insurance company to do what I want them to do.
Right.
Okay?
Right. So again, you're not so much going after the individual as you are the insurance company. So you've got to find that information that's going to trip their trigger. So
well, that's true. And another thing that you do is you do an asset search. You look into what this driver had. I mean, does he have real property? Does he have – we look at the tax rolls to see what kind of real property he owns in his name. We do some of our background searches to see if it looks as though there are other assets that we can get to. Because in some cases, you know, you have a significant loss like this and you only have $30,000 of coverage. So then you get into issues such as, you know, can the defendant pay on the judgment if we win?
Right.
And we also get into issues with regard to like UIM, uninsured motorist coverage or underinsured motorist coverage, where potentially if we don't have enough coverage from the tortfeasor, the driver in this case, then we can get coverage from our own claim.
Now I know this is
own policy.
This is a civil case, but does the driver's criminal record show up here?
Well, we got his criminal record, and depending on you know what we're able to show with the criminal record, then it would come in. Typically, you're talking about felonies within the last 10 years always come in. Okay. But if you have a record that relates to, let's say, a pattern, you can show a pattern of careless and reckless or a pattern of speeding or something like that, then yes, potentially the court would allow that type of evidence in to show the pattern. In this particular
maybe
case.
Maybe not in a criminal case, but maybe in a civil case. Right.
Right. So, in this case, we did get the driving record, and we found that this individual had, I want to say, 5, 6, 7 over the past 10 years, careless and reckless and excessive speeding tickets that he had received. But he had only had like one conviction, I think, and it was a reduced conviction. So he definitely had a pattern of being an erratic and maybe unsafe driver. So obviously that was helpful to us. So we're at a point now where, you know, we're proceeding with the litigation. We file the lawsuit and you know, basically it's a lawsuit for wrongful death. Another thing about wrongful death, by the way, is we talked about 2-year statute of limitations. Any recovery that you get on a wrongful death does not pass pursuant to the terms of the will as well. That's an interesting issue.
Oh, really?
You could have. This individual could have left everything in his will to the church.
Right.
You know, does it matter? It passes through intestacy. It passes based on the statutory scheme in the state of North Carolina for a North Carolina resident.
So the widow may not recover at all.
She may not, but under intestacy, she does. She recovers, yes, and some to her kids. But so that's an interesting dynamic as well.
Okay. All right. More to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Online at harvellandcollins.com. You can call and make your appointment, too, at 726-9050. We get back into this world of litigation in just a moment. Hey, Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, attorneys at law. Again, talking about a wrongful death case. And again, you're at this point where you've filed suit. So does that allow for certain amounts of discovery? Now it says like you don't have subpoena power here. So
right. Well, I didn't have subpoena power until I filed. So mm-hmm. obviously at that point in time, then I could subpoena witnesses and mm-hmm. get written discovery, so on and so forth. And we only have like 3 or 4 minutes left, so this will definitely go into next week because mm-hmm. we just filed the lawsuit.
Right, right.
So when we talk about filing the lawsuit, that's, you know, obviously the complaint.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, we're making specific allegations in the complaint about what happened. We're making allegations to support a claim for wrongful death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to take your time and to draft all pleadings, complaints, answers, third-party answers, doesn't matter what the pleadings are, you know, with care,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of mistakes are made in pleadings, in cases. And my personal opinion is that, you know, I think that a lot of lawyers are a little bit too quick to pull the trigger on some of these things instead mm-hmm. of really sitting down and doing the investigation on it and thinking through it.
We've talked before about how cases mm-hmm. of lawsuits are often a funnel. You know, they start out big and they can narrow down. So in this case, would you draft that kind of in a broad language so that it covers a lot of ground?
Pretty broad, yes. But in this type of claim, since we know it's a wrongful death claim, certain allegations need to be made. You just follow basically mm-hmm. the jury instructions on a, what's called a prima facie wrongful death claim
mm-hmm.
and make sure you have all of that in there. And then, you know, you're off and running with regard to that. So, I mean, you file it, you serve it, and then the defendant then has 30 days and almost always gets an extension if they're represented by an attorney
mm-hmm.
for an additional 30 days to then answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they answer it, they're going to raise affirmative defenses. They're going to raise defenses that they think they can use in order to avoid liability.
Right.
Or to minimize liability. One of them being contributory negligence. If you fail to raise contributory negligence, this is one of the affirmative defenses where if you do not raise it in your answer, you waive it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my complaint that I filed, I would have, I don't have it sitting in front of me, but I would have brought a, allegation of what's called last clear chance. Now what that is that's a response to, contributory negligence. Okay,
mm-hmm.
fine. We walked out in front of the car, but you had the last clear chance to keep from running me over.
Right.
Okay.
That's an interesting concept. I didn't know that.
Right. And you failed to do that because you were speeding or because you weren't paying attention or you were, you know, flipping mm-hmm. with your cell phone or something. So what you're trying to do there is you're trying to at least create a jury issue
mm-hmm.
so there's enough facts so that this case is not dismissed on contributory negligence, but you get through summary judgment so that the jury can hear all the facts
mm-hmm.
about the whole incident to decide whether last clear chance applies
mm-hmm.
so that we do have coverage and we do have a valid claim.
All right, more to come next week here on Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins, attorneys at law. And you can reach them again at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street, Morehead City.